folks. How are you doing? It's great to be back. Just waiting for my buddy to connect here. Rodolfo Macello, Rudy Macello. And then we're gonna get started with Chá Pedagógico. There he is. There he is. I hope you missed us because we have been very busy and we missed invite him. And I hope you cannot hear my neighbors because they are having
a party here.
Hey, what's up, man?
Good to see you again, man.
Good to see you, bro.
We saw each other last week, right? But, you know, it's always a pleasure. We saw each other last week, right?
Oh, for sure. For sure we did, man. How's it going?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm excited to be back here, man. You know, I missed Chá Pedagógico. It's like, it's part of our monthly routine, right? We're back.
Yeah, we're back. And it's so weird. It feels like we've been on vacation for like 5 years, but it's only been like 1.5 or maybe 2 months, if I'm not wrong.
And you can tell by the way we look like bums, man, with the beard and the hair. You look like a bum more than me, actually.
Because of the hair. Yeah, it's a long hair, brother.
Yeah, it's a long hair. I know.
It's a long hair, man.
Well, you know, we've been working from home mostly now, so we don't really care. We don't get a haircut as we used to. Not as often, anyway.
Dude, it's been 1.5 years that I don't have a haircut.
I haven't had a decent haircut in a very long time. I got the trimmer, the clipper here, so I do it myself, but then it doesn't look good, but, you know, whatever. Sometimes my wife helps me. Yep.
That would be my suggestion. Like, ask her wife to help you. This would be very interesting strategy. For those who don't know how to use the clipper, you know. But hey, we're back. Welcome everyone to another episode of Chá Pedagógico, the first one of 2021. And if there's one thing I can say is that for this year, I think even though you can only see my white wall, but I'm at a different scenario actually because I have a different armchair. I'm sitting on an armchair now. I don't have a very uncomfortable chair anymore. And you also have a different scenario. So we basically have different scenarios.
I got this awesome wallpaper that kind of simulates the blackboard, and then I can write on it, and then I've been working on this crazy concept that you know about, and I just wanted to introduce everyone to my cat, Elena. She just, you know, happened to be here. I don't know why. I think, and she doesn't really like when I do that to her, but
she's not very social.
No. But, you know, we're trying our best to make her comfortable. So this is really, you know, something I think I learned that from, I don't know, man, design thinking or whatever. So you have to have a space in the house or a notepad or post-its, you know, for you to kind of jot down your crazy ideas and then go back to them. So I'm using this wall now.
Good.
The problem is it's been like this for more than a month now.
It's because Chá Pedagógico is getting bigger and bigger, you know, like, you know, most TV shows year after year, they kind of like change the scenario. They change the layout and all these things. So that's what's happening with Chá Pedagógico right now. You know, we're changing the whole scenario.
We're grown-ups now. And, you know, I'm really excited about today's episode because I think it was you, man. Maybe, I'm not sure, because we never really remember who had the idea, but I think it was you who said, we have to honor those who came before us, right?
Yeah.
So let's look at, you know, the major contributions of our areas. And then the first thing that came to mind when you said that was Sir Isaac Newton's quote, and he said, if I remember correctly, if I was able to see further, it was by standing on the shoulders of giants. Right?
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to do today. We're going to stand on the shoulders of giants and talk about their contribution.
Totally, totally.
And that's awesome.
But before, I think before we start, once again, I'd like to welcome everyone to the very first episode of Chapa Pedagogica 2021. And quick reminders, this episode is going to be on IGTV of EDC Rocks. Yep. Okay, so guys, if you didn't have the opportunity to actually follow us from scratch, you can see the recording of this episode on IGTV. Also on YouTube, this episode is going to be on YouTube this week. I promise I'll do my best this year to upload the episodes as fast as I can. So it's going to be this week on YouTube. All you got to do is search for Marcello Consultoria on YouTube. You're going to find the channel and you're going to see this and previous episodes there. And we're also on Spotify for those who cannot watch us or for those who are maybe along the week stuck in traffic. And oh my God, this is a traffic jam, a huge traffic here. What do I do? Well, you can listen to us, you know,
maybe doing the dishes.
or maybe if you're on the subway and it's like you got to go all the way through the lines and you know and you're going to step off the train in the last platform, then you can listen to us and prepare your lessons at the same time. You can use us as inspiration as you listen to us. You can also prepare your lesson plans all the way through your last platform. So don't forget, guys, IGTV, YouTube, and Spotify in the format of podcast. Of course, on Spotify, you're not going to be able to see us. I don't know if this is good or bad.
Yeah, I think that's actually a positive thing, you know.
So
no visual distraction.
If you're listening to us on Spotify, we look like two bums. And as Andre said, I look more a bum than he does.
Yeah, you do.
Because my hair is super long. And one more thing. On YouTube, I found a way to close caption the episode. So every episode is going to be closed captioned.
Cool.
So all you got to do when you watch us on YouTube, click on closed caption button. And then you're going to be able to actually not only listen and watch us, but you're also going to be able to read whatever we're saying.
Cool.
For those who can actually, for those who can't hear us, or for those who have some sort of hearing impairment. So this is another thing, because we don't have enough people to contribute to sign language. So this is a way. So we're going to honor, this episode is going to be an honor for those who paved the way. We were having this conversation a couple of weeks ago. I think it was before, it was the end of last year, where we were thinking about the episode for this year. And we were like, why not? Because there's so many people. I mean, if we're here talking about the things that we know, if we're sharing the knowledge that we know, if you guys are sharing the knowledge that you guys know, it's because of those who came before us. Even if those guys are completely obsolete today, but you have to remember, like maybe 50 decades ago, 50 years ago or decades ago, maybe those guys were not obsolete. Those guys actually were groundbreaking. So, because of those guys, they're here.
Exactly. And that was, part of the problem, like choosing who I was going to talk about, because there's so many people who have made huge contributions, right, to neuroscience and psychology and education. And some of them are very controversial. Some of them, I'm going to talk about a guy who, you know, neuroscientists nowadays really hate, but he has definitely changed the way we see, you know, therapy, for example, and, getting professional help and things like that. But I don't know about you, Rudy. I think I remember when you said, so what's your list? You know, who's on your list, right? I was like, oh, man, I don't know. I had like, okay, can it be like 10 people? But then we wouldn't have time to talk about that, right? But yeah, it was hard to be for you too, right?
Man, yeah, we actually came down to four names, but it was... It was heartbreaking to leave a lot of people out of the list. Seriously, it was.
That's how I felt.
It really broke my heart, because there were so many people. And I try to choose the ones that I actually, they're like superheroes in my area.
Yeah.
In our fields of study, and those who are who actually have been incentivizing me because they're not dead yet. So those who I selected are not dead yet, at least not that I know of. But if I may, I think I'd like to start with the most obvious one, of course, Chomsky.
Yep. Chomsky.
You know.
Yeah.
Cheers for Chomsky, brother.
Cheers, Chomsky. Yeah. Well, this guy is one of the most quoted guys in linguistics, and not only linguistics nowadays, right?
In linguistics, in politics, in psychology, in literature, in you name it, you know. Yep. But why is that pretty obvious? And I think the question is, for those who have been following us, you guys must be asking, but Rudy, you question Chomsky all the time. You say that, that there's a lot of things that he says and that he said were not very consistent. And you're still, you know, paying homage to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. Because seriously, what he said, whatever he said, and he said a lot of things, was in 1959. He became groundbreaking in 1959.
Yeah.
This, when I say 1959, I think it's important here to actually understand the whole historical context around the whole thing there. The world had just come out of a bad world war. So there were a lot of researches going on and many fields of study. And then nobody was actually bold enough to touch areas, the linguistics area, because we were talking about constructivism and behaviorism and all these things.
Yeah.
But no one said, wait a minute, there's something going on with our brains. So basically, it was groundbreaking because of that. In 1959, he was bold enough to say, there's something in our brains. And this something that we have in our brains is because we evolved millions and millions of years of mutations. And now we do have something in our minds called a language acquisition device, or LAD. Even though, and again, this was 1959, the beginning of the 60s, and today is 2021, a completely different scenario, historical scenario, a completely different technological scenario, different century, because this was in the last century. So have to remember, it's a different millennium. And this is actually the second decade of the 21st century. We're already in the second decade of the new century. So, and we were talking about the half of last, the first half of the last century. So that was remarkable, because what he said was so powerful, because he opened the doors like, wait a minute. So if he's talking about the brains, if he's considering language as something that's going on with our brains, inside our brains, let's see if this is true. Let's see if this is real. And we wouldn't be here, because he influenced me, of course, as a linguist. Probably he influenced you too, Andre, even though you're not a linguist. But he talked about the brain in 1959. So the first, my first tribute here is for Chomsky, of course.
Chomsky, yeah. And dude, I have to say something about Chomsky as well, because we studied, even in neuroscience, you know, and we had a unit called cognition and language. And of course, we went all the way back to, you know, behaviorism. We talked about, constructivism, social interactionism, and all of that. And then Chomsky, he kind of pointed us towards, the right direction of there has to be something that is unique to human brains. It's not really a device or a mechanism or whatever, just, the entire brain is unique, right? Because of years and years of evolution. But then again, it's the whole nurture and nature debate, right? And then, so he's definitely somebody who deserves our tribute, even though nowadays we know that a lot of his ideas are not really corroborated, let's say,
exactly,
by, scientific discovery, but still. But, and then my first choice, for being a very important guy who really paved the way for, the future of neuroscience, really, for how we understand how the brain works, was a guy from Spain who's already dead, and his name was Santiago Ramón y Cajal. And this guy, apparently, he was a troublemaker when he was a kid. He got kicked out of, many schools because it was like a hellraiser. So when you start digging his biography, everybody says that he was not really a geek. He wanted to be an artist. And his dad would take him to cemeteries for him to draw stuff. And, and then he became very interested in anatomy. And then he joined the army. And then he had very complicated diseases. They actually had a mission to Cuba, and he got tuberculosis and, a bunch of things. He was apparently okay. And it was when he decided to become a doctor, to study medicine, that he realized that he had something to contribute. So we call this guy the father of modern neuroscience because he was the one who was the first person to find empirical evidence, in a way, for the idea that neurons, they are separated, they are individual cells, Before Santiago Ramón y Cajal, the theory that was, going on, most people believed in something called the reticulum. So the reticulum is like a huge network that there are no gaps, no divisions, just a bunch of wires all together and they're all connected. And how did he do that? How did he actually see that? Golgi, a guy from Italy, had invented a very cool technique, like a staining technique to detect different cells. They call it the black stain, right? And it's a very toxic mixture of silver nitrate and phosphorus and whatever. And then for some reason, when you apply that to brain tissue, the cells, they become very black, very dark, and then everything else is not affected, which is great because you can see the cells very, very clearly. And then Golgi believed that the cells were still connected all together. They were the reticulum, but, Santiago Ramón y Cajal, hellraiser, troublemaker, he said, take a look, there's a small gap between the cells, and that's the synapse. So this guy was the very first one to actually see the synapse, and then that changed our understanding of neuroscience, how the brain works. So, to Santiago Ramón y Cajal, yes.
Ramón y Cajal.
We honor you.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have a question. You were talking about Golgi. Was he also the guy who actually found out or whose guy the Golgi complex was named after?
Exactly.
The
it was named after him. Golgi was an Italian scientist, and he he was the one that they got the name to, for the complex. And a very interesting thing, I think it was 1906 or 09, I don't remember, both Golgi and Cajal were given the Nobel Prize for discovering the neuron, right? So very cool, huh?
But you were talking about hellraisers, I think these are these are the guys, These are the guys that there's a reason why we're honoring these guys, because you have to you have to question everything. I know the slogan of Maciello Consultoria is leave the status quo. There's a reason for that, because if we live in the status quo, not leave, if we live, if we're sitting our butts on the status quo, we're never going to do anything different. We're never going to evolve. And it's of our human nature to evolve. I don't know if you remember the webinar that Professor Paul Howard Jones gave us last year, second semester of last year. He mentioned that in the very beginning of his webinar, we are entities. We are a combination of cells that want to evolve. It's part of our nature to evolve. So if we sit our butts on the status quo, we're never going to evolve. Whether we're engineers, medical doctors, dentists, teachers, language teachers, math teachers, it doesn't matter. And because we are teachers, yes, it's even harder for us. Or actually, it's even it's our role or evolving plays a bigger role here because we're constantly having generations and generations coming over. And different profiles and different backgrounds and all these things. So we have to constantly evolve. We cannot be in the status quo. We should never be in the status quo. Of course, sometimes it's hard to see ourselves inserted in the status quo. But once we see, once we realize, like, wait a minute, I'm in the status quo. I haven't changed anything. All right, so go for it. Try something new, try something different, experiment things, be open-minded for everything. And because we have to be open-minded to everything, my second hero, so to say here, I think it's also pretty obvious because I talk about this guy like 24/7 almost, Michael Tomasello, of course.
Yeah.
Tomasello, cheers for you. And
Tomasello, cheers. Yeah.
Why? First of all, because he's a great guy, I never had a chance to actually meet him in person, but you know that I've already had some conversations with him, never in person. Yeah. But he's a great guy, and why? Because he studies something that is really, really huge in my field of study, even though he's not a linguist, he's an anthropologist. Yeah. And he studies the behavior of people, the psychological behavior of people. He has a huge impact and contribution to linguistics, especially to language acquisition, because he is one of the, I don't know if I can say he is one of the fathers, but he is definitely one of the most famous people for usage-based learning field of study. What's usage-based learning field of study? Well, this idea of usage-based is that we're going to develop our language based on social interactions. And these social interactions are going to trigger our cognition. And we are going to use our cognition to make some associations of language and behavior. We connect these two things. And based on these two things, we're going to create concepts. And based on these concepts, we're going to be like, oh, so in this situation, in this context, we normally use this combination of words because this combination of words means that. Great. Yeah. I got it. I'm going to do the same. And then we're going to improve our repertoire. And when he says usage-based, it's not only in our case now, students using the language. It's also adults, or in our case, teachers, using the language and providing input to our students. We are giving them the linguistic model to our students. And based on this model, that's how they are going to make this association. And more interestingly, he also talks about something that's like a subcategory of usage-based learning, which is what? Shared intention. And in many of my webinars, presentations, and all these things, I talk about the idea or the studies of the linguistic device as if language was a Cartesian plane, and a bi-dimensional Cartesian plane. And with this horizontal axis would be the syntactic order. And the vertical axis would be the repertoire, the words. As we combine the words, we create as many sentences as possible. That would be the notion of a linguistic device. So we are going to be in contact with a lot of words, combined words, and then our brain is going to put them in the right order, in the right place. And then based on one or two examples, our brain is going to, oh, I understood what it means. So now every other word that goes into that, that falls into that category, I'm going to put in this order and combine and make sentences. Well, that's right up to a certain point, and that's what Chomsky used in his colorless green flowers.
Yeah.
You know, that makes no sense, because this is the third dimension that I, you know, humbly say, it's tridimensional, because we do have the synthetic order in the horizontal axis. Yeah. We do have combination of words in the vertical axis. But we also have the intention as a third axis, as the z-axis here. And this intention is crucial for language acquisition. And Tomasello, of course, he talks about shared intentions. Not only him, of course, but he talks about shared intention. Yeah. And that's it. If I understand, if it's because Andre and I and you guys have similar intentions. I know exactly the word combination I'm going to use in order to communicate with you guys. So
you can even anticipate exactly
anticipate things. So in a Google-ish way, when you're typing Google, of course they use an algorithm based on this, similar to
complete,
that, like,
right?
And they complete whatever, like, oh, you start typing, you're in the middle of typing something, and then Google automatically gives you some choices like, whoa, Google is reading my mind. Well, it's kind of like that. We have shared intentions with Google. So I couldn't leave him out of my list. Tomasello, of course.
Dude, Tomasello, yes. And you know what? Something funny. You always talk about Tomasello, and I was doing some research for a lesson on brain and language evolution. And guess who popped up, you know? Tomasello, because as you said, he's an anthropologist, and he did some work on primates, and then that thing about shared intentions, you know, and really meaning, you know, using sign language to mean something to. So it's very, very important. And that has a weird connection to my next, you know, let's say hero. Usage-based learning, right? And that has a very weird connection to Brenda Milner. I want to talk about Brenda Milner before I talk about the other one. But Brenda Milner, she was a pioneer. And I think she's still alive. She's like 102 nowadays, like 103, something
100.
Like that.
100?
Yeah, she's really old nowadays, but she's still alive and kicking, man.
Whoa!
And one of the things, and this is the funny thing. So she got her first degree at the University of Cambridge. She's British. And then she moved to Canada, to Montreal, to study and to actually be one of the students of Wilder Penfield, one of the greatest neuroscientists who actually discovered the lobes, you know, like named the different parts of the brain. Mm-hmm. And this guy worked with the guy who created the theory that we were able to observe later of use it or lose it, that has everything to do with usage-based learning.
Yeah.
Donald Hebb. He created a theory of long-term potentiation, like neurons that fire together, they wire together, right? The more you use something, the more you reinforce that in your brain, and the easier or, you know, the faster for you to retrieve that. It becomes part of your repertoire, sort of, you know, subconscious. You don't really have to think about it. And this woman, Brenda Milner, so she was assigned by Wilder Penfield to study a very weird case of a guy who had been in an accident, who was a kid, and he cracked his skull. and he was having epileptic attacks, like seizures, right? And then there was a very famous hotshot neuroscientist in the 50s. His name was William Scoville, I think. And he decided, they, you know, based on the research of thin film, they decided that they needed to remove certain parts of the temporal lobe, so the medial temporal lobe, where we can find the hippocampus. Mm-hmm. The hippocampus is inside, because that would stop the seizures. And it did stop the seizures. So they stuck kind of a straw, a metal straw, they sucked out parts of the hippocampus of this poor guy, HM. And then this guy stopped seizuring, so he had no seizures anymore. His intelligence seemed to be intact, mm-hmm. but he couldn't remember, he couldn't make new memories, you know. He actually forgot most of the decade previous to this surgery, and he couldn't make new memories. Brenda Milner was the one who studied this guy for a very long time. She was the one, we could call her the mother of neuropsychology, clinical nice. Neuropsychology, because she was the one who, for the very first time, said that there are different types of memory, that we, and those memories are processed in different parts of the brain, because she saw that he couldn't remember names and concepts and new ideas, but he could still remember a skill. Like, she tested him, asking him to draw a star between two other concentric stars, but by looking at a mirror. So there was a mirror, and then he had to do it. And of course, the first time you try, you get all wrong. But with practice, you know exactly what you have to do. So he was still able to remember how to do it. But if you asked him, so when did you learn how to do it? He couldn't remember the sessions he had, because that's declarative memory. And this woman, still kicking, she produced this huge amount of knowledge for us. And nowadays we know so many different types of memory because of this pioneer work. So here's to Brenda Milner. Okay.
Brenda Milner.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. What was the name again? You just said the name of the doctor that actually removed part of the temporal lobe.
William Scoville.
When you mentioned his name right now, automatically I had an image of some Harry Potter character, because he has the name of a Harry Potter character. I was like, okay, yeah. I think he's a wizard or something. There was some
and
spell.
I remember, dude, did you ever watch the Prison Break or something? I don't know if you ever watched
Which
that.
One?
It was
Prison
a TV series. Prison Break, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I think the name of the main character who got arrested and was planning to break out of prison, his first name was Scoville, or Michael Scoville, or something like that. And that, I don't know if it had any relation to this guy, to this neuroscientist, maybe. But yeah, so
probably
this is how our memory works, right? We make associations.
I think probably because these writers, they like to play word games, you know, like Scoville,
definitely.
And then when you dig it up, you're going to see, oh, Scoville was the name of the guy, blah, blah, blah. Probably there is.
Yeah.
But automatically, when it said William Scoville, I was like, okay, he's a wizard, he has a wand. And he was like,
yeah.
Temporal Lobus Laboratorium, boom. And then something
Exactly. That's perfect.
It's
I can see Hermione correcting your pronunciation right now.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, he's not one of the guys that we're, you know, paying homage yeah. here, so we can make fun of his name. We're paying homage on Brenda Milner and not Scoville, so
yeah.
we can make fun of his
exactly.
name and all these things. But it's
yeah.
so interesting, because I envy you, even though I read a lot of women who actually have contributed a lot to the field of linguistics. I feel bad now that, you know, I was thinking I haven't included in my name. Actually, I included in my name only one woman. And now
yeah.
I feel bad.
It
I should have included
right.
more. Now that, you know, came to yeah. me. But anyway, and
yeah.
you, I'm very thankful for you inviting me to, you know, talk to your students of Pookie last week. Thank you so much. And
that was awesome.
It was really cool. And
it was really great.
At that moment, I had a great opportunity to talk to them a little bit more about how to construct concepts and conceptualization in general. There are so many guys that I've been reading about it. I never stopped reading about these guys. But I would like to, you know, pay tribute here, pay homage here to, I'd say one guy, but it's actually two at the same time, William Kraft and Ronald Langacker, because these guys talk about conceptualizations and grammar constructions. Because the whole thing behind is that grammar is not something normative nor descriptive. It's part of, remember when I talked about usage-based, we understand the context and all these things. Well, the context is important because then we're going to storage in our mind footage. So we're going to storage a lot of footage in our minds. And this footage is conceptualizations. We create concepts. And these concepts are going to be responsible for our speech. The speech is going to be the tool we use to kind of like give shape to our thoughts. And Ronald Langacker and William Kraft, they say this. And one of the examples that they say is the word away. Because the word away, of course, not only in second language, but in language acquisition in general, during the process, when we think about the word away, automatically we understand that it's what? An object that was previously at a certain point, and now it's at a distant point than previously. Yeah. So that's the whole concept that we have. And then because we understand this concept, when we have to give a shape or give a body, I don't know if you guys have been in WandaVision, vision has a body. So the body of our thought or the vision of our thought is the language. And when we want to give a body to our thought using a way, using this concept, we use a way. That's the word to represent that concept. And whenever we want to say, please go away, it means go to a point that was previously here, but now it's not here. It's far from here. Or when we say, that island or that country is too far away from us, meaning that we are at this point here and that country is located at a point using ours as landmark completely far from this. So William Kraft, Ronald Langacker, tribute to these guys. These guys are amazing. Yes.
We honor you guys. Great. Okay, so let me talk about the next one. And this, I'm not saving the best for last, I guess, but this one, highly controversial. Everybody has heard his name. He has shaped most of what we think in terms of, you know, psychology and even Western philosophy. And this guy's name was Sigmund Freud, an Austrian, crazy, I don't want to say anything but, you know, bad, but he was really highly controversial. And nowadays you can find, YouTube videos and interviews of, you know, experts and even, you know, seminars, like lectures that range from everything he said was bullshit to, you know,
boo-boo.
He changed the way we think.
Boo-boo.
Yes, exactly.
That's okay. We can curse because on YouTube I tag that the episode is not for kids. So that's fine. We can curse.
So we can say one bad word. It's like, I think there's a rule for movies like that, right? You can say one bad word and that's okay. you can get away with that. But that's a good show. This guy really, you know, he brings it up, right? I you know, whenever we're talking about Freud, it's brought up somehow. And again, you can find people who love him, people who hate him. And I think it's important for us to understand where he came from. So he came from Austria. That was the 19th century. He wanted to be a doctor, so he ended up being a neurologist. But then his methods were not very nice, you know. And then, again, I think the first thing we should know about Freud is that he realized that a lot of the symptoms that his patients were displaying, he didn't have any sort of physiological origin, right? Because he would look inside their brains, you know, he would actually, be able to determine whether there had been damage or not.
Yeah.
And then he realized that, no, so if it's not coming from the physical body, it has to be coming somewhere else. And then he realized it was coming from the mind. And then he was the guy who proposed, of course, there were people who had been talking about that before him, but he was the really first one to say that our experiences in childhood, they're going to shape who we are in adulthood, and there might be severe consequences to, you know, the way that we relate to one another. And then he, I think, one of the biggest contributions was exactly the field of psychoanalysis or psychodynamics, that talk therapy, right? Because before Freud, you know, if you had any kind of mental issue or condition, you would be locked up in an asylum, you know, and they would probably torture whatever you had out of you, try to do it, or electroshock therapy and stuff like that, which has its place in some cases, according to neuroscience, but still, they would, you know, do it for everyone. And nowadays, we understand that he was lying about his results. He was really mean to his patients and unethical. He would often do things that are considered non-scientific, you know, pseudoscience. But I think we should honor Freud. So here's to Freud.
Because here's to Freud.
He opened up. Here's to Freud. You know, he opened up.
He opened up a lot of doors and also a lot of patients.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, at least a pathway for us to talk about our problems and get treatment, right? One of the things that he was obsessed with sex, man.
Yeah.
So this guy, he was a pervert. So everything
really
had a sexual cause.
He
called it the psychosexual stages of, you know, oral fixation, anal fixation, genital fixation, and stuff like that. And he also had this idea that we are living for pleasure and we're trying to avoid pain.
Yeah.
So our unconscious mind is all about pleasure and sex and violence and animal and behavior, right? And then we have this moral mind that he called a superego that is all about living in community and, you know, being kind to one another and everything. So that's why in the 1910s, 20s, or there's the image of the little devil and the little angel on your shoulder, and you are the ego. So you had the little devil is the id, the unconscious mind, and the little angel is the superego, and there's a battle, and you have to decide which way you're going to go. We know that it's not like that exactly. We know that the age doesn't have superpowers and things like that. But
exactly. But he was
something.
He was his impact was so huge that many European countries, they also understood that as a liberation. So they actually agreed with what Freud said. Of course, not Freud, but of course, he opened the doors for so many other studies that came after him. And many European countries saw that as a liberty. So they were, so that's why they are so okay with a lot of things. They don't have second thoughts about a lot of things like, my body. Oh, no, that's why we have so many European countries. And one of the, and the revolution that the United States had, the sexual revolution that the United States had, and mainly in the 60s, the mid-60s, the late-60s, and all these things with the hippie movement and all these things, was also based on Freud.
Definitely, yeah.
Almost four decades later. Because it's all about that. Like, oh, wait a minute. So why do we have to be moralists? If it's not a crime, why do we have to hold it down? You know, we don't have to do that anymore. So that's how impactful Freud was.
Yeah.
And I'm not a huge connoisseur of Freud, of course. I've read some things. I have very superficial understanding of Freud because it's definitely not my area here. And I'd like now to talk about a person. We talk about a lot of guys that are international. This guy is also international, but he's been living in Brazil, more specifically here in my city for so many years that I consider him Brazilian. Yeah. Professor, it's hard to pronounce his name. So Professor Raja Gopalan. Yes. He's from India. He's not from Brazil, of course, but he's been living in Brazil. He's been a professor of Unicamp for so many years that I consider him Brazilian. And why am I, paying homage to Professor Rajan? He likes to be called Rajan because Raja Gopalan is like too long. So Professor Rajan is too long. It's much better. Yeah. He studies pragmatism, linguistic pragmatism, pragmatics.
Yeah.
And I'm all about pragmatics. Semantics and pragmatics work hand in hand. So, And more recently, not that recent anymore, because it's been a while, I'm looking up there because the book is right above me. It's because it's not that, it's a little bit far from my reach here, but it's close to me right now. And one of his books, he actually revisits the notion that we do not speak things without thinking. There's no such thing. There's no such thing as, oh, he's just saying or she's just saying. No, there's no such thing. Every production, every oral, every linguistic production has something behind that, has something, has a purpose. Yes. And and this he's revisiting that because that goes against what for decades, and I remember when I was taking my undergrad course in at college, my professor said this difference between locutionary and elocutionary speech. So what would be elocutionary speech? Elocutionary speech is, when a person produces something linguistically, just for the sake of producing it, there's no agenda behind that. There's no meaning behind that. It's completely nonsense, no. And then locutionary speech is when a person is orally or linguistically producing something with a meaning behind that, with a purpose behind that. Okay, and then he says, no, forget everything that we said up until now, because this is a misinterpretation of what Austin said. That's not what he meant at all. Yeah. What he was saying, he was actually in doubt whether there is existence of elocutionary acts or elocutionary speech. And he was in doubt, and unfortunately, he died before he could actually finish his job. And then there was a guy that came after him called Cyril, or in Portuguese is Cirli, okay? And Cyril actually carried on with kind of like Austin's job, but in his own way, because Cyril was not, he was against this idea that, oh no, a person never says something just to say something. No, there is always, there is always, the person is saying something, the person is not saying something. He liked, things separate.
Yeah.
But that's not what Austin says, said. That's not what Professor Rajan says. And that's also what I believe, There's no such thing as, Rudy is saying something nonsense. No, there's no such thing.
He doesn't mean it, right?
He doesn't mean it. No, there's always a meaning behind. There's always an intention. you know, even though, of course, I'm not talking about consciousness or subconsciousness. No, that's not the question here. We're paying homage to Professor Rajan. And this guy's awesome. And he lives like some
your neighbor, then.
Some miles away from here.
you have to pay him a visit.
And his doors are always open because I paid him some visits. And his doors are always open.
Cool, man. All right, so this is my last one now, right? Yeah.
I guess.
I can't believe we're almost done, man. Okay, this one is a more contemporary guy. And I really like to talk about him because I have one of his books that really inspired me to think about the relationship between cognition and emotion, right? So this guy, his name is Antonio Damasio. He's probably one of the most important neuroscientists in the world from Portugal. So a couple of years I was in Portugal with my wife. I went to Faculdade de Medicina de Lisboa, where this guy studied. I actually shot a very quick video there. And then, so what Antonio Damasio is not, I didn't select this guy just because of his body of work, but also his wife, Hanna Damasio. She was the one in 1993 or 4, if I'm not mistaken, with Antonio Damasio and a team of researchers to study the skull of a guy who had a freaky accident in the 19th century, Phineas Gage. So he was a railroad worker. And so it was 1848 or something like that. And he had this huge iron rod, right, that he used to shove some sand into huge rocks with some powder, like gunpowder, to, you know, explode things and then build the railroad. But for some reason, I think there was a spark when he was doing that with a huge metal rod, like a 1.5 meter iron rod. And when he did that, the whole thing exploded, and this rod went through his left cheek and came out like,
ouch,
you know?
Ouch.
Yeah, so it actually, so it came, it entered his left cheek, and then it came out of his left prefrontal cortex, you know, sort of this area. And the funny thing is that this guy, he didn't pass out. He was totally fine. He lost his eye, right? Because he went through this, you know, the optic nerve and everything.
Come on.
But he was fine. He was just walking. He got the rod. He went to see a doctor, John Harlow. He was okay, you know. But then later, they realized that he had lost something. So he had kind of lost his ability to control himself. He had become more aggressive, impulsive. He would, you know, like ladies were walking, and then he would call them names and do stuff like that. So Hanna Damasio was the one who kind of figured out which areas of the brain it damaged, the whole accident damaged. And Antonio Damasio nowadays, he talks about the idea that we can never separate body from mind, from emotion, from cognition. And we look at things from different perspectives. We can do that. But a lot of people have this misconception that you need to stop feeling or suppress your emotions so that you can do whatever you have to do cognitively. You cannot do that. It's impossible to do that because things work together in the brain. And nowadays, he's been talking about the relationship between feeling and consciousness. And then again, we need to be able to put them together. We shouldn't talk about them separately because when you are hungry, for example, you feel that you're hungry, you have to be conscious that you're hungry so that you can go get food, right? So it has to become a conscious thing. So this guy is awesome, and his book is Erro de Descartes. So you can find Descartes' Error, and he talks about this, you know, very interesting symbiosis, right, between cognition and emotion. Do not separate them. They are together. I'm teaching a class about this tomorrow. So if my students are here, you start first here. Chat pedagógico.
Yeah.
Here's to Antonio Damasio.
Antonio Damasio. Yeah. Cheers, bro. Yeah. And guys, if you haven't read anything about Descartes, or Descartes, read it. Because this guy was also groundbreaking, but He was groundbreaking like 400 years ago.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
He was a groundbreaker centuries ago. Read the cartoon.
Yep.
Because it's really, really amazing. And just, you know, just because I really cannot finish this episode without mentioning a great person. When I was taking my master's in Edinburgh, this person was actually, had just finished her PhD, and she was kind of like beginning to become someone very important in the fields of linguistics, which is Professor Eva Dubrovska. She's a great person, super smart. She's also one of my favorite people to study because she's the new age of linguistics, neurocognitive linguistics. You know, because she's actually you know combining what Tomasello said, what Kraft said, what Langacker said, Jackendoff. Nina Spaden, Lightbound, and all these guys who actually paved the way. She's combining all these guys. She's a little bit before me, you know, but we are all contemporaries, so I cannot finish this episode without mentioning her name, Professor Eva Dubrovska. If one day you see this episode, we're paying homage to you, to your name, because you kick ass.
So here's to Eva Dubrovska, man.
Yes.
There you go.
Whoa. How long did you have? We did it.
I have like 2 minutes. That should be like three minutes.
Anna asked us something. List their names on IG. Yes.
You will do that. I will definitely do that. I just want to say something very, very, very quick. We have an upcoming event for the MBEC, Greg. And it's going to be in Portuguese, if I'm not mistaken. So for Brazilian teachers, for Ana as well, because you can understand Portuguese. Anybody from Argentina and Latin America, you can join. And it's going to be about memory, retrieval practice. Check out Brass Piso MBE Sig on Instagram. Sign up. It's going to be awesome. You have to go there. Really. It's going to be, you know, amazing.
And it's free.
All right.
And it's free. And it's free. Yeah. And guys, please, if you like the episodes of Chat Pedagógico, we have something very important to ask you, all of you, whether you're listening to us on Spotify or watching us on IGTV or YouTube later. Watch the film, The Arrival.
Yes.
Okay. Watch this film first. Yes. It's a kick-ass film. 2, great plot. 3, we're only going to say
Amy
the
Adams.
Next episode of Shopping Lush.
Amy Adams. 4,
oh yeah,
Jeremy Renner. Yeah,
yeah, well, yeah. I mean, the actors are great. But you know, and 3, we're only going to say the number 3. In the next episode of Chat Pedagógico, but please watch this film. It's very recent. It's not that old, and it's not that recent either.
Yeah, I think it's like three, four years ago.
Yeah, something like that. Watch Arrival. It's a sci-fi, but it's great sci-fi.
We're going to
give you some answers about it in the next episode of Chat Pedagógico. Please don't forget to follow us here on Instagram at Marcello Consultoria and at EDC Rocks. Don't forget to follow this episode on Spotify if you like podcasts. This episode is also going to be available on IGTV, EDC Rocks IGTV, and also on YouTube this week. I'm going to upload it to Marcello Consultoria's channel on YouTube this week. Thank you so much for watching us. This is the very first episode of 2021.
Yes, awesome. Thank you very much. I just wanted to say the last thing, we have a couple of seconds. My week, last week was awesome because Rudy was part of my lesson about language and thought. And the coolest part was, you know, I asked my students to read his text on EFL Magazine, which you can still read. Our thoughts have no official language. I asked my students to read it. And then what would you ask the author of this text if you could talk to him, right? And then they started thinking of a bunch of questions. And guess what? Somebody mentioned the author had just joined the session because his name was right there. So that was very cool. Thank you for being there, Rudy. That was
Thanks
awesome.
For an invitation. Andre, thank you so much, guys. Guys, Andre, thank you, brother. See ya. Bye-bye.